I was just mentioning at the top of the show, you may have heard a little cut of Dr. Joe Roach, and he's an astrophysicist with the Science Gallery in Dublin, and he has signed up to go to Mars and to never come back. I think this is quite fascinating. This is a group looking for the first red planet colonists. They've received almost 200,000 applications on YouTube. You can actually watch a huge amount of them on YouTube. And these are people who are fascinated by the idea of being the first colonists on Mars. But the idea is when you get there, you ain't coming back. Dr. Joe Roach, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Interesting to see that you are an astrophysicist.
I am indeed, yes. I'm at Science Gallery here at Trinity College.
My first question for you is, which is sure, very important, is, are you a fan of the TV show Big Bang Theory?
Oh, goodness. That's a question we get asked a lot. I have seen it, and I think I'm going to try and be a little diplomatic with my answer, but I think if it brings science into the public conversation, then it's a good thing. But sometimes I feel watching it that people are laughing at the scientists rather than with them, and I'm a little bit worried about that stereotype.
I'm a huge fan of Big Bang Theory.
So am I. It's great.
Sheldon, Leonard, Raj, Howard, Penny, everybody. I think it is so funny. But I think it's really clever as well, the way it does deal. The way it makes science and physics funny, I think, is what's very clever about it. And may encourage more people in a bizarre way to go into science, you know, if that helps.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Sometimes I think that, I mean, they do portray some stereotypes of scientists, and they are right with a lot of them, I guess. But, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are regular scientists. I guess that might be a little rich coming from a guy that's trying to go to Mars and not again.
You're trying to shed the nerdy, geeky image. Well, the thing is, Joe, if you get to Mars, you don't have to worry about the Big Bang Theory because you ain't going to get Sky TV up there. Why do you want to go to Mars?
Well, for me, it almost seems like it's a straightforward process. I grew up on a small farm in Kildare. I spent my nights looking at the stars and the clear skies. We have these beautiful clear skies here in Ireland, and just, I guess, dreaming about the stars since I was a young boy. And then I went to Trinity here. I studied science. I went to NASA in the States for a while to work, and then I came back here to Trinity to my PhD in astrophysics, and now I've spent the last couple of years traveling around the world for Science Gallery, speaking about science and trying to get the public involved in the scientific discussion. And the idea that now we're discussing the ethics of space exploration in public, it's a wonderful opportunity.
I think it's fascinating, on so many levels, but the level I think it's most fascinating is that you will be the first people to set foot on Mars. And secondly, you ain't coming back, which means it is like the beginning of a colony. It's almost like, you know, in a strange way, Adam and Eve and Mars is the Garden of Eden, and you are the first there. Not only will you be the first to colonize it, but you have to set social structures, probably political structures, family structures, feeding structures, living structures. It's quite, I mean, you're being given a carte blanche to create an entire new society.
Yeah, absolutely. It's new territory for everyone, and that's why the selection process is so interesting, because I mean, you're not just sending astronauts, you're sending the bones of a new civilization.
Yeah.
So what type of people should you look for? And that's a question that we're going to have to answer over the next couple of years.
Well, firstly, how many get to go on the first journey?
On the first journey, there'll be four astronauts that would be scheduled to launch in 2024 and land in 2025. After that, every 2 years, there'll be another four astronauts until the colony reaches a number of 20 people.
And is there an age profile for the first four? And is it two male, two female? Has that been decided?
That hasn't been decided yet. I mean, the open call to civilians and over 200,000 people applied to it was open to anyone that was older than 18 and younger than 81. So they have the final 1,058 now, and this round is actually a medical round, so I guess we'll be finding out who's physically capable of making such a journey.
I suppose the last one will probably be a psychological round, as to to talk about your level of mental fitness and how you'll adjust to this complete state of loneliness and not getting back to Earth. I mean, while you say you were lying in bed in Kildare looking up at the stars, you'll be lying in bed in Mars, possibly looking down at Earth. That's going to be a bit scary.
Yeah, I mean, there are real challenges that would have to be overcome. I mean, it's not just being up on Mars, but even the journey there would be 7 months where you're confined to a small space. and wouldn't be able to walk outside. And I think, like, people have been asking me what I would miss most, and obviously my friends and family, of course, take priority, but I think even the likes of nature, I mean, being able to step outside on a nice sunny day, have a blue sky over you, hear the birds singing, smell of freshly cut grass, these are things that you would never be able to experience anymore. So I think that would be something I would have to come to terms with.
And to explain to people again why you're not coming back, the idea is that we do have the technology to get you there. And I mean, we've seen many space probes as well that head off for thousands of years, possibly, and we don't know if they're ever going to blow up or not. We don't have the science to launch you back from Mars to Earth. I mean, that's basically it, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. I mean, we've gotten very good at launching things from Earth, and we're confident we can land things on Mars, but trying to launch something from another planet without a space station and then hoping to hit Earth on the return trip, it's technically a huge challenge, but also it's a huge financial obstacle. And that's why the Mars One project is unique in its idea that you could cut out that stumbling block and reduce the cost of mission significantly by not having the return trip.
See, I was also reading that there's a psychology behind this as well, that if you send colonists off to Mars and there was a hope or a chance that they may only be there for a couple of years and be able to get back, that they're not going to give it as much, you know, thought, structure, you know, if you thought you could get back, it's like, oh, I'm only here for a year or two. When you know you're never coming back, you've got to create a new world on your own, basically.
Yeah, you'd be tasked with building a new society, as you say. One of the things is, though, you'd be experiencing conditions that no human has encountered before.
Yeah.
So the things like you wouldn't be allowed to procreate or anything, because there's no guarantee that an unborn child in an environment that has only gravity of about 38% of what we have here on Earth, there's no knowing if that could damage a child. So you'd be at the mercy of what happens on Earth. If for some reason the project ran out of funding and they couldn't reach you anymore and couldn't give you supplies, then yeah, you really would have to start thinking about making a life for yourself on Mars and being independent.
I can only imagine every night before you go to sleep and a million things go through your head about what if.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, my life hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, I was reading about some applicants who, because I've been getting so much media attention, I've had to quit their jobs and everything's changed. But for me, I mean, my job here in Science Gallery is to travel the world and talk about science, and I still get to do that. I just get to talk about Mars now as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's such a small chance of me being selected. I mean, the odds aren't really in my favour, and I guess there's so many things that could go wrong with the mission. It is sure a dream that I would clinch to, but no, it doesn't keep me awake at night. I mean, personally, it's almost like a win-win situation. If I get to go, it's a dream come true. It's stuff that dreams are made of. I couldn't even imagine how amazing it would be. But on the other hand, if I didn't go, I mean, then I'd have a chance at maybe a happy life or convincing some woman to be my wife or maybe having a family. I mean, this isn't the worst consolation prize in the world.
Yeah, until Mars 2 comes along and she's going, leave it out, Joe. You want to go now? when you go, and I was looking at the Mars 1 website and reading about this guy who's putting all the money behind it, but you can see the modules almost that you have to build. And so do you know what you're going to have to take with you to begin? I mean, when you step outside the space rocket as such, what do you start doing?
Well, they've planned it so that as soon as you arrive, you would have a lot of time to recover, because after 7 months traveling, your bone density and your muscles would have deteriorated, so you won't be capable of doing a whole lot. And that's
the craziest jet lag you'll ever have in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's difficult to even test how someone would deal with that. But the habitat that you would live in would be pre-assembled, so there would be six missions ahead of that, unmanned missions that would build those modules, join them together. And then as soon as you arrive, you would have a livable habitat to enter.
All right, got you. So there's going to be a couple of probes or such, a rocket sent up that drops stuff on the Mars surface and self-assembled through robots. So when you land, it's there.
Those modules, you see, would have been landed individually, and then a separate mission would have landed a rover, and the rover would be controlled from Earth and would be used to assemble those modules into a livable habitat.
What about food? Will they have started a such sort of growing food? Obviously, you're going to have to start growing something to sustain life there.
Yeah, unfortunately for a guy that likes his food, I have to deal with the fact that it wouldn't be the most exciting of diets. We would have rations on the spacecraft with us, but as soon as we're on Mars, we would be growing plants and then breeding insects to eat for our protein.
And again, you're not going to be too sure about how plants are going to grow in that. I mean, obviously, you're going to have an environment inside this sort of module, which will be Earth's environment. But I'd imagine as it establishes itself, you'll want to create an atmosphere similar to Earth, if that's possible.
Maybe in the long term, but something like that I don't think will be feasible for many years. The plants themselves will be hydroponic plants. I mean, we know that we can extract water from the soil on Mars. There's plenty of hydrogen and oxygen there to extract, and plenty of carbon dioxide as well, which the plants would need. So I think the plants idea is very feasible. But yeah, trying to create an atmosphere for us to live in will be a little bit more tricky.
What is the ultimate aim of the mission? Is the ultimate aim of the mission to make Mars habitable?
Yes, but also I think there's something more subtle. Just even putting people on a different planet, I think, would have a big impact on our society. I mean, the first time we saw the Earth from the moon, that had a huge impact on our society and resulted in the Earth Day movement and various environmental issues, because for the first time we saw how small and vulnerable and fragile our planet is. And I think if we were to go to live on Mars, I mean, we'd have to accept as a society that we're on the cusp of putting people on another planet. And even though my living conditions there will be very difficult, I'd still have a more comfortable life than a lot of people already live on Earth. And I mean, that's something that we would have to think about. We'd have to look at ourselves and say, we have the capabilities to live on another planet now. Why have we not fixed things that are wrong with the
Earth? Absolutely, yes. Fascinating to think of it that way as well. I would imagine if there's four going, I don't know, but I would imagine it's either two male, two female. I couldn't imagine three male, one female. I mean, there will be a period of time, I'd imagine, for a year at least, that those four people, if you're one of those four, would nearly have to live together, because this is for life then.
Yeah, you'd hope that you'd get on with them, I guess.
Because
you can't really trade them in for anyone else.
What do your friends and family think? Do they think you're nuts?
I think they thought I was nuts beforehand. So
okay.
my family are very supportive. They support me with anything I do or think I want to do. My poor parents found out actually in a public talk. Sometimes if I don't see them at a prolonged period, they come find me at work.
Right.
And I was giving a talk for Science Gallery and was discussing the ethics of space exploration and my application to live on Mars. And afterwards someone asked, well, what do your parents think? And I had to say, well, you know, here's the mother and father right here. I guess they can answer that one.
Wow.
So they've had to deal with it from the start. And of course, I mean, it would be traumatic for them to have to say goodbye to me. But it's such a small chance. There's no need for them to think about that unless I do get extremely lucky and make it to the final round.
I'm just thinking, the last day, if you get through and you're about to be launched off into Mars and not coming back, so it's a sort of a desert island Joe, what would you take? Music? Would you take some music with you?
I think, well, see, the thing is, we would have internet connection and we'd have access to email, and there'd be a delay, of course. I mean, I think it's about 3 minutes, 22 seconds delay back to Earth, but there'd be a communication satellite around Mars, so we would have connectivity with the Earth. So I think I'd probably just take something sentimental, I guess, something that would probably remind me of my family while I'm there.
Yeah. So you'll be able to get Netflix.
Yeah, I'd have plenty of time to watch them, yeah.
I can see Netflix already making that ad.
I mean, the great thing is that they're encouraging people who would potentially go to, they would have as much time as they want to do research and to do science. And for someone like me, I mean, that'd be a dream come true. Like, I'd have opportunities to do science that no one else in history would have ever had.
Now, just to say, this is going to cost billions. By the end, somebody said it's estimated around $6 billion to send the first crew. So they are raising money. And obviously, in this day and age, sponsorship is a big way, or even TV rights. So this is going to be the ultimate TV reality show as well. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's their business model. Yeah, so they're estimating about $6 billion would get the first mission away. And the model they're looking at is, say, something like the Olympics, which attracts a global audience and raises between $6 and $8 billion. They would imagine that the whole world would hopefully tune in to watch the first people setting foot on a new planet. And yeah, the TV rights to that, they think could fetch as high as the Olympics, and that would fund the mission.
And I know when Armstrong landed on the moon, and that it was, I mean, it was sketchy camera work. It wasn't great, and the technology has changed so much. You'd probably have a GoPro camera on your head, and we'd probably be able to link in and choose which camera angle to look at from, and all that sort of stuff. So that would be quite amazing in itself, because it would be almost in HD, I would imagine. You know, as you step out into Mars, that'd be fascinating.
Yeah, there'd be no hiding, and I guess you'd probably have to think about saying something important.
Yeah. Have you thought about that yet?
No. As you're saying that, I'm just thinking of, I guess in my head, I'd probably like to say something uniquely Irish or something. Maybe something like, geez, plenty of road frontage up here or something. I don't know. Maybe hopefully it's not something that would shame my family or yeah, make me an embarrassment to the country. But
is it something like, hey, anyone spot the parking meter? You know? Are off camera, you could just go, wow, did you see that? Did you see that run past? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of my friends have been trying to wind me up, saying that it sounds almost like a horror mission, and if there are a horror movie, and in every horror movie, the person that always gets killed off first is the wisecracking funny guy, which I have to take as a compliment that my friends think is funny.
It is absolutely fascinating. Listen, we're going to follow this one. And I know it's been really busy for you as well, because everyone's getting on board this. But I just think that I just think the whole concept of colonizing a planet is absolutely fascinating. Right from the first step to maybe 1,000 years' time, when we do create an atmosphere where we can live on Mars, it'd be just something else.
And well, thanks very much for having me. I mean, the idea, even that we're just having this discussion about space exploration as a public conversation, I think that's wonderful.
Joe, best of luck.